This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
In which we explore some alternate ways to know what's going on in this economy. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday today, the 11th day of July. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So look, I'm not going to lie. The big economic news this week is not really a today story. Wednesday, we're going to get the June inflation report. That will get a whole lot of headlines here and elsewhere. Friday will come retail sales, consumers, and how we're spending. Always critical, as we've told you, I think, a zillion times. Also, industrial production, American factories, and how they are doing. In the non-government and official statistics category, there are going to be some earnings reports from some big companies coming our way this week. That includes Pepsi, Delta Airlines, banks as well, JP Morgan and Citigroup, to name a couple. So while we wait for the actual indicators, we asked Marketplace's Justin Ho to look at what those earnings might be able to tell us about this economy.
Let's start with PepsiCo, the maker of sodas, potato chips, Doritos, Quaker Oats, in other words, grocery basics.
It's a stable business.
That's Tom Perko, president of BevMark Consulting, which advises food and beverage companies on consumer decision-making. He says people likely haven't cut back on those kinds of products all that much, even though prices have been rising. But we're still likely to hear about steps PepsiCo is taking to ensure that people keep buying.
In local supermarkets that we watch, we see some really extraordinary couponing and free insert deals for things like soda and chips that look really good.
Then there's Delta Airlines. Airfares have been rising this year, thanks in part to higher fuel costs. But Moody's airline analyst Jonathan Root says anyone who's been in an airport this summer knows that a lot of people are still flying.
Higher fuel has not been a problem for the traveling public.
If airlines like Delta continue to report strong ticket sales, that's a good sign about how consumers feel about the broader economy, says Henry Hartevelt, travel industry analyst at Atmosphere Research Group.
It also means that they feel confident that they will have the discretionary income they need to take a trip.
But the picture might not be as rosy when the country's big banks report earnings later this week. Gerard Cassidy is a bank analyst at RBC Capital Markets. He says he'll be watching for what bank executives have to say about an economic slowdown.
The question really will be, how serious is the slowdown and does it turn into a full-fledged recession in 2023?
One sign that banks are concerned about a slowdown is whether they're setting aside more cash to cover bad loans.
Over the next 12 months, as the economy slows, delinquencies will rise and credit losses will rise.
But so far this year, Cassidy says those delinquencies have hovered near record lows. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, one of the major indices was down, another one was down more, and a third was down the most. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. So I mentioned that inflation number we're going to get on Wednesday. Well, spoiler alert, it's going to be high, maybe 9% or more year on year. And the headline item guaranteed is going to be energy costs, even though lately those costs have been coming down. Remember, it's the consumer price index for June before oil and gas really started coming down. Anyway, that got us thinking it is time to call Austin Golding. He runs the family business. It's called Golding Barge Lines, on whose barges mostly is carried petroleum products. Austin, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you, Kai.
So it's been a year almost, and things have changed. Last time it was after a hurricane. It was in the middle of a pandemic. How are things now?
Well, you know, things have definitely been chaotic. we've seen some recovery in our market as demand has come back, as things have opened up. But trying to find people and retain our people has been a real struggle, as well as how to try to recoup some of the inflationary costs of just being able to run and operate a towboat and barge operation. Everything from the loaf of bread to the gear oil to the replacement paint, everything's more expensive. So it's been a real struggle with people and parts.
All right. Well, that was the whole interview in like one answer. So let me break it down a little bit. First of all, let's remind people that you move mostly petroleum products. As we know, petroleum is hot right now. Demand is back for you, I'd imagine, to what it was before and then some.
It's definitely back to where it was before. During COVID, there was actually quite a bit of refining capacity that was taken offline or scheduled to come offline. Yeah. I believe it's around 1 million barrels, give or take, depending on which analysis you look at. That refining capacity coming offline has limited some of the places that we go and has kind of changed some of our patterns. But really, in a very larger sense, the cost of equipment, the cost of construction is going up, as well as the cost of capital with interest rates going up. And to really push on that, we're not seeing much new construction at all within our industry. Market conditions have improved.
Does new construction to you mean new barges and new towboats? Is that what that means?
Yes, there are new towboats being built, but there are not new large tank barges being built right now. It is a very, very slow time for new construction just because the rate structure doesn't support it, and the cost of it is the most expensive it's ever been.
Okay. Next item in your first answer there, labor. We've talked a lot, you and I, about labor and some of the challenges, both pandemic and pre. Where are you now?
Well, we've seen a wage increase, which I think was due. That's our first step as a good employer, is not just complain about it, do something about it. So we've seen anywhere between a 5% and 8% increase in our wages, depending on what level you're talking about. And we've also gotten really creative with how we recruit. We're going to rural areas. We're going to places that may not know about our industry and trying to selectively recruit. But pay increase came first. Creative recruiting came second. And we're hoping that some reference and some retention come through after the fact.
Okay, so let's talk inflation. Rates are going up. Things all over the place are more expensive. Is that hitting you? Got to be, right?
Oh, absolutely. Almost every bit of the rate increases that we have seen in our market have been kind of, I like to put it, they've been gobbled up from the bottom up by all of our operational costs going up right at the same pace or even faster than we can recoup them with wage increases. You got to remember, we may move gas and diesel, but we move our people around with that gas and diesel and our boats. So as the cost of energy has gone up, the cost of our logistics have gone up, and then life on the boat is more expensive. Everything from the light bulb to the food in the pantry to the mechanical gear to the bed linens, all more expensive these days.
All right, so this is none of my business, but how are you doing business-wise at Golding Barge Lines? I mean, are you better off than you were before, not making as much? What?
I think we're slightly more profitable, and the reason we're slightly more profitable is kudos to our team. During COVID, we learned to run mean and lean, and we also saw our business actually increase from the number of customers and the variability of our customers. Since we talked, Kai, we've expanded our rock business. We started pushing a lot more aggregate and rock.
Rocks, as in like big boulders and stuff like that, rocks?
Absolutely. Wow. Straight out of the quarry that eventually goes down the supply chain into asphalt and road construction for the most part.
Got to diversify, I suppose, right?
I got to diversify for sustainability and also diversification for the sake of diversification. We like to not be so exposed to some of this oil and gas volatility.
Austin Golding, he runs a family business. It's called Golding Barge Lines down in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Austin, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Guy. Have a great one.
You too. We'll be right back. Abbott Laboratories, the healthcare company, now they make, among other things, medical devices and diagnostic tests, also nutrition products, including, as of about a week, maybe 10 days ago, baby formula once again. The company's biggest formula plant in southern Michigan has reopened after its most recent shutdown, this one due to flooding. But the bigger and longer closure was cause of a voluntary recall and an FDA investigation into the formula made there. And that, of course, was the shutdown that led to the formula shortage in this country. That is still happening, by the way. And it also brought attention to the many challenges that foreign formula manufacturers face trying to get into this market. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has that one.
In the last 4 weeks, there have been way fewer choices in terms of the kinds of baby formula available. According to Krishna Kumar Estave with the market data firm IRI.
Pre-pandemic, if you go to a store, you would have like 24, 25 choices. It's down to 11.
Almost all of that baby formula bought in the U.S. is made here. Erica York is a senior economist at the Tax Foundation.
So imports currently satisfy less than 2% of the demand within the United States, and the rest is normally met by domestic producers, which is a very concentrated market.
There's now a focus on expanding that market. That includes making it easier for foreign companies to get FDA approval to be sold here.
So providing that, you know, if it's good in this country, it's good in our country type of arrangement could help increase access for foreign manufacturers.
The U.S. also imposes tariffs on formula of up to 17.5%. Gabriela Beaumont-Smith is with the Cato Institute. She says that also deters foreign imports.
Baby formula is a necessity. There shouldn't be any kind of import tax on formula at all.
There are a couple of bills before Congress that would lift the tariffs, at least temporarily. That isn't the focus for the Biden administration. Instead, it's concentrating on making it simpler for certain foreign producers to get FDA approval. Samira Fazali is deputy director of the National Economic Council.
These high-quality producers are going to have a pathway towards staying here in the U.S. and get the time they need to meet all of our normal regulatory requirements.
Fosley says it's a good moment to figure out how to diversify, which is good both for a reliable source of formula and for providing more choices for families. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Something told me I wanted to meet her.
And the rest is history. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials down 164 points, about a half percent, 31,173. The NASDAQ down 262 points, 2.25%, finished at 11,372. The S&P 500 off 44, about 1.1%, 38.54. Checking in on the companies we heard about in Justin Ho's piece on corporate earnings, Citigroup. Down 1.3%. Wells Fargo gave up just shy of 1%. PepsiCo trickled down about 0.8%. So Elon Musk says he is not buying Twitter. The company, of course, says we'll see in court. But now that the corporate romance of the year is over, we think Twitter down 11.3% today. If there's been a winner in this, it's Digital World Acquisition Corp. That's the SPAC that plans to link up with former President Trump's Truth Social Network. Shares in DWAC. I'm guessing that's how you pronounce it, DWAC, DWAC, picked up 20% today. Bonds rose, yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 2.99%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? Don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Andy Euler, he covers energy for us. He got an email last night from something known as ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, the power grid operator down there. Said email was asking Mr. Euler and other Texans and Texas businesses to voluntarily conserve electricity today, Monday, between 2 and 8 p.m., which is to say the hottest time of the day in the middle of a heat wave. One would be forgiven here for asking, what is up with the Texas grid anyway, especially after all those terrible outages last year and the fixes that were promised? Here's Andy with an update.
It is hot here in Texas. Triple-digit highs in much of the state have folks running their AC.
Demand today is going to be driven by residential air conditioning.
Joshua Rhodes is a research associate at the University of Texas.
That's going to be the biggest load on the system, is everyone's homes, individual air conditioners adding up to a massive amount of electricity demand.
He says that's why ERCOT sent out those emails asking people to use less. Doug Lewin is president of Stoic Energy. He says those emails highlight a problem with the way ERCOT runs the grid. What's needed, he says, is demand flexibility.
In our system right now, unfortunately, what we have is a system where the grid operator puts out, and I'm using their word, an appeal, a conservation appeal with a capital C and a capital A, like, pretty please, we're appealing to you to turn down your thermostat.
And ERCOT might even get the opposite reaction from some folks who went days without power during the winter storm in February of last year, says Caitlin Smith at Jupiter Power.
A lot of consumers had this very terrible experience. And I think you even run the risk of people are saying, no, we don't want to help you, right? I think that's a risk you run right now.
Now, some cities and electricity providers in Texas pay customers to use less. Austin Energy gives me, for instance, rebate incentives to minimize how much AC I use this summer in times of peak demand. But that's not true everywhere.
In most of the rest of the state, we don't.
Daniel Cohan teaches environmental engineering at Rice University in Houston.
Most of us are paying fixed rates for electricity where we don't have the financial incentive to shift when we use power.
He says another problem facing Texas right now is that a lot of power is being generated far from where it's being consumed. We need more infrastructure, he says, to get power from solar plants in West Texas and wind farms in South Texas to homes hundreds of miles away in Houston and Dallas. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
We're going to do a little more energy now, from the availability of power in Texas to the price of it in Alaska. Fuel prices in rural and often roadless Alaska are consistently high. This spring, fuel was cheaper out in the villages than it was in some of Alaska's biggest cities. But now that summer has settled in, that is changing. As Emily Schwing reports, barges are on their way out to already cash-strapped communities with the first fresh fuel deliveries of the year.
For most of the spring, people in Brevig Mission paid about $4.25 per gallon for gasoline. Elmer Seetot relies heavily on gas to power his boat to hunt marine mammals.
So we just got done doing a spring harvest, catching bearded seals and walrus. So that was a successful year for us.
Roughly 430 people live in Brevig Mission, 65 miles north of Nome on the Bering Sea coast. Now with summer in full swing, people need gas to hunt, fish, and pick berries so they can stock their freezers for the rest of the year.
We're just waiting for fishing right now.
A barge delivers fuel to Brevig Mission every summer after the sea ice goes out and again in the fall, before the Bering Sea freezes over. In June, Brevig Mission was still using gas delivered last fall. It was cheaper than on Alaska's road system. Seetot says he and his neighbors are filling up every gas can, barrel, and drum they can find with the cheaper fuel.
I think after in a few more months, whenever we get a barge, then that's we're going to be paying $6.50 gallons. So.
Crowley is the company that delivers 65 million gallons of gas to 300 rural communities in Alaska. Prices could fluctuate even after it's delivered in some villages. Crowley declined an interview but said fuel deliveries would move forward as planned this year. In Noatak, a village 70 miles north of the Arctic Circle, everything, including fuel, is delivered by airplane.
Some people pay like $1,000 to $1,400 a month for to
electricity.
Pay electricity.
That's Lucy Hall, the tribal clerk for the village of Noatak. She was with her friend, 67-year-old elder Hannah Onalek.
Because we have to cover the fuel costs for the generators.
In Noatak, diesel powers the generators that keep the lights on. There are trees, but collecting firewood requires fuel. So diesel is also used for home heating. Onalek says the situation is dire.
Long ago, we had no electricity. We depended on the land, on the river for fish. And we bought our Coleman lights, you know, Coleman stoves. We lived on those. But now, nowadays, everything is what with electricity and all that. So it's very, very, very hard today.
In Noatak, residents say they saw an $18 per gallon price tag for gas in June. A 50-gallon drum of diesel costs over $800 and lasts roughly 2 weeks. In Alaska, winter is always coming. That's why people like Amber Vaska are scrambling to help before summer's end. Vaska is the executive director of Tribal Government and Client Services for Alaska's Tanana Chiefs Conference, a nonprofit corporation that provides support services to tribes in Alaska's interior region.
I think our people in rural Alaska is just going to be in a desperate situation because all of their commodities is going to, the price is going to just roar outrageously in the coming months.
Earlier this year, Alaska's state legislature did pass an energy relief payment for qualifying Alaskan residents. When the roughly $650 payments hit bank accounts hasn't been announced. And in rural villages, it's unclear how far that money will stretch when they do. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing for Marketplace.
Come tomorrow, we'll get some data from the National Federation of Independent Business on how small business owners have been feeling in this economy. Our feeling about that, though, is why wait? We got a whole slew of small business owners that we talk to all the time. A bit more than 2 years ago, we started checking in with Rita Magaldi. She runs Sheer Ambrosia. That's a baklava business in Draper, Utah, that got super busy after being featured on some lists of local Black-owned businesses there. So, she sent us an update.
July is historically the slowest month for baklava sales, but it's okay because I'm resting up a bit for my big debut at the David Eccles School of Business at the University of Utah. On April 1st, the local Black Chamber, Salt Lake City Black Chamber, has an event that they've had for several years now, and they invited me to come and bring my baklava. I got there early, set up my booth, and this beautiful, elegant lady walked by, and something told me I wanted to meet her. Later on in the evening, when things were a little bit slower, you know, just kind of said, hey, I just wanted to tell you, your hair, your makeup, the dress, you just got it going on, sister. And she, you know, stopped and looked around at my booth. And then she looked me square in the eye and she said, you know, I know about a program that could really help you take your business to the next level. Are you at all interested in that? And I said, well, yeah, you know, tell me all about it. It's a master's in business creation. You have to have a functioning business full time. And so I applied and they told me that I had gotten into the program. It's free. We all get a scholarship for $36,000. So I get this first class education and help with my business, and I don't have to spend a dime. I have basically funded Sheer Ambrosia since day one, and I've had to shell out pretty large amounts of money for, you know, a single mom with two kids, and pretty much ran the business entirely on my own. To think about having a mentor, which is part of the program, you know, it's just so exciting. This is, you know, after Christmas, you know, I thought, okay, where is Sheer Ambrosia going to go from here? And then this program just came out of nowhere for me, all because I saw a beautiful woman and wanted to compliment her. That's a lesson in and of itself, that when, you know, you see somebody, whether you know them or not, you should give them the compliment.
Rita McGaldy, running Sheer Ambrosia and starting school next month in Draper, Utah. This final note on the way out today, a little tidbit of research out from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, how we're all feeling about inflation. Inflation expectations, right? You've heard me talk about that and how Jay Powell thinks about that all the time. Anyway, the latest reading from the New York Fed goes like this. We are still thinking, we is all of us, by the way, we're still thinking inflation's going to be high in the short-ish term, 6.8% for the year ahead on average. 3 years out, though, average inflation expectations, a much closer to normal 3.6%. All right, off we go, but here is your moment of economic context. Haven't updated this one in a while. The backlog of container ships down the road from us at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. Remember, the high was 109 back in January this year. As of Friday, close of business, 25. Not so bad, right? Our daily production team includes Anis Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Giong, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.